Good morning, everyone. We are in Book 9, the Book of Eternal Night. Canto 1, which is called Towards the Black Void. And last week we had a look at the second section of that canto. I'm not quite sure where we stopped. Page 575?
Line 146 is what I have.
Okay.
Is that okay?
All right, line 146, yes. So this is Death telling Savitri to release her hold. It's not that she's physically holding Satyavan's body anymore. She has put it down. It is lying on the ground at her feet. But still inwardly, she is holding on to his spirit. And Death has told her, unclasp, let go of your influence over Satyavan. You must now return back to your lonely life on earth. And when Savitri does not reply or respond, then Death speaks again, this time in a more human way, lowering its mighty key to human chords. But still, behind it, there's some dreadful negative sound which echoes all sadness and immortal scorn. And he tells her, you must let this body belongs to earth and to you, but Satyavan's spirit now belongs to a greater power. And if you go on holding on to the spirit, which has to move forward on its journey, you are causing suffering. So your husband suffers. So we can go on from there. And we can go on from line 147, yes. Which way will we go today? Margaret. Audrey can read, huh?
Drew back her heart's force, that fast is
far.
No, line 146. Line 147. It ceased. This is the voice of Death, yes.
It ceased.
I've misled everybody by ahead with the explanation before we read it. Sorry.
It ceased, she moved not, and it spoke again, lowering its mighty key to human chords. Yet a dread cry behind the uttered sounds, echoing all sadness and immortal scorn, moaned like a hunger of far wandering waves. Wilt thou forever keep thy passionate hold, thyself a creature doomed like him to pass, denying his soul death's calm and silent rest? Relax thy grasp. This body is earth's and thine. His spirit now belongs to a greater power. Woman, thy husband suffers.
Thank you. Thank you. I think these lines are fairly clear. Anybody wants to ask anything or comment? Death is always emphasizing that what he is offering is calm, silent rest. He says, if you keep on holding on to him like this, he is suffering. You will read, Larry?
Which line?
Line 157, where it says, start Savitri.
Savitri drew back her heart's force that clasped his body still, where from her lap renounced on the smooth grass, softly it lay, as often before in sleep, when from their couch she rose in the white dawn by her daily tasks. Now too, as if called, she rose and stood gathered in lonely strength, like one who drops his mantle for a race and waits the signal, motionlessly swift. She knew not to what course, her spirit above, on the crypt summit of her secret form, like one left sentinel on a mountain crest, a fiery-footed splendor, puissant wing, watched, flaming silent, with her voiceless soul, like a still sail upon a windless sea. White, passionless, it rode, an anchored might, waiting what far-ridged impulse should arise out of the eternal depths and cast its surge.
Thank you. It's a beautiful series of pictures, no? Like a kind of slideshow. First, Savitri inwardly letting go of Satyavan's body, which is lying on the smooth grass, and the way that she stands up and leaves it is similar to the way in the early morning she used to get up and leave Satyavan still sleeping while she had to get up and start the day's work, getting the water, lighting the fire, and so on. So now too it says if she's been called by a task, no? But she stands up and she rose and stood gathered in lonely strength, all alone, gathering all her strength, like one who lets go of his mantle, his cloak. He's going to have to run a race. He's waiting for the signal. So she too is waiting for a signal. Motionlessly swift, a runner who is waiting for the starting signal. He's full of his swiftness, but he's not yet moving. Motionlessly swift. We're on page 575 at the bottom. So she's waiting for the signal. She knows she will have to move, but she doesn't know in what direction. She knew not to what course. A runner who's going to run a race knows where he's going to have to run, but she doesn't know. And then this picture of her spirit, which we had seen, had risen up out of the nest of the body. So her spirit above is on the crypt summit of her secret form, that subtle body that had wonderfully appeared on the summit, the topmost peak of it. He says it's a crypt summit, which is a bit mysterious, because a crypt normally is underneath. It's in the basement of a cathedral or something like that. But it also means something which is secret and mysterious. So I think it is in that sense which it's used here, this mysterious, hidden summit of her being. It's there watching like a sentinel on a mountain crest, a fiery-footed splendor with powerful wings. It's watching. Her spirit is watching, flaming but silent. And her soul, the center of her being, is like a still sail upon a windless sea, a very, very calm sea, and one single small boat with a white sail. When a boat is alone like that on the sea, it is probably anchored. It has let down its anchor. It's based on something which keeps it more or less in the same place. No? And then we say that the boat, the ship, is riding at anchor. It's riding on the surface of the sea, but it won't move too far away from that place where it's positioned. And here there's no wind. No? So her soul is like that, an anchored might. It's powerful, it's held firmly. No? It's riding there, white, pure, integral, passionless, very, very calm. And her soul is waiting. It's waiting for a huge wave to come on this sea. What far-ridged impulse should arise? A wave that you can see it coming. This wave she expects to rise up out of the eternal depths and cast its surge, its immense power, and carry her forward. You read.
Death, the king, leaned boundless down, as leans night over tired lands, when evening pales and fading gleams break down the horizon's walls. Nor yet the dusk grows mystic with the moon. The dim and awful Godhead rose erect from his brief stooping to touch, to his touch on earth, and like a dream that wakes out of a dream, forsaking the poor mold of that dead clay, another luminous Satyavan arose, starting upright from the recumbent earth, as if someone over viewless borders stepped, emerging on the edge of unseen worlds. In the earth's day, the silent marvel stood between the mortal woman and the god. Such seemed he, as if one departed came wearing the light of a celestial shape, splendidly alien to the mortal air.
Thank you. Again, it's quite a vivid and clear series of pictures. No? Anybody would like to ask anything?
Here, also, mortal woman is mentioned. Emphasis on she's being a woman.
Yes.
And then this word very strong to me when we addressed her, woman, what is it, let her go or something like that.
Woman, thy husband suffers,
yes.
He says.
He's repeating.
Yes.
Woman.
And Sri Aurobindo points to this several times in the poem that Savitri represents woman in many ways, in the way of strength, in the way of being heart-centered.
The question is, woman, thy husband suffer. that means she's holding him. And we also, when people die, we hold,
yes.
We grieve. So my question is, the best attitude would be to let it go?
That's what he exactly says here, yes.
He's advising. So what, as a human being, when we have our loved one die,
yes.
We should not make them suffer.
No, we should not.
Yes.
We should not. They are moving on. The soul has chosen to leave the body,
yes.
In order to move on its journey. So we can grieve for ourselves because we will miss them. But still, if we were really deeply inwardly in touch with them, we can keep that inward touch. But we shouldn't hold on to them to prevent them. The soul has chosen this, no? Yeah.
It seems to make very difficult the way for the soul to go because of the,
yes,
of
yes.
The maybe yes. Especially mother with kids or things like that.
Mm.
It's very painful and the soul cannot really go.
Yeah. Yes.
So in this part of the where it's the dim and awful God have rose erect from his brief stooping, and then that goes on to say another luminous Satyavan arose. So is that the same? Are we looking at that dim and awful Godhead as Satyavan?
No.
Yes.
No, death has stooped down and touched Satyavan's body. And out of it, this luminous form is arising. That's his subtle soul form, we can say, of Satyavan. It's a very beautiful one. He's standing up from the recumbent earth, and the recumbent earth is also his body, no? And it says, if somebody has just crossed over a borderline, we can't see the borderline, but there he is, he's crossed over, and there suddenly he is standing, no? Emerging on the edge of unseen worlds, the subtle worlds.
And when he stood between the mortal woman, in that case, the god is death?
Yes, yes. And they, again and again, Sri Aurobindo tells us which order they are moving in. I think at this point, Savitri is leading. And later on, the Satyavan goes in front. So, but he's at this moment, he's standing between the mortal woman and the god, as if they are still, in a way, competing for him, no? And he's like somebody who's departed, has come back wearing all the light of his divine shape, his celestial shape, which looks in our mortal atmosphere splendidly alien, a wonderful shining being there. And then Sri Aurobindo describes Savitri's reaction to this form. Rosa, you will read?
Yes. The mind so thinks long round and fell back from unfamiliar cues beheld yet launched by the sweet radiant form unsatisfied, incredulous of its two bright hills of heaven. Too strange the brilliant contrast, two lights clasp beside the overall creations of the earth. Reared in the ardor of material sounds, the senses sensed in a vain, a glorious shape. Only the spirit knew, the spirit still, and the heart divine, the old.
Thank you. Is this clear to you, Jan? Can you explain it to everybody?
So basically the whole thing?
Hmm?
Okay. So what's happening here is the mind, I'm not sure who, but I think...
This is Savitri's mind, yeah?
She's searching for things that will comfort her and bring her back to this current moment and help her to encourage her to go on. But it goes back.
Yes, it...
It
can't recognize. This is such a different appearance. No? The mind can't recognize.
Yeah. Some things are beyond our mind to understand. And beheld yet long, but the sweet radiant form unsatisfied. So it's unsatisfied. It can't grasp what it needs to keep going. And because of the hints of heaven.
It doesn't believe in those. They can't quite believe in that heavenly form.
But still there is the soul, her soul, and I'm not sure if it's death or Satyavan, but there's still, those are the ones that can't understand each other, the mind.
Yeah, I think it's the mind. The mind is unsatisfied by this lovely radiant form because it can't believe in it. No, these are not the forms that and the colors that it's used to. What it wants, he says, is the warm creations of the earth. It wants a familiar human physical form, no, that's been brought up in the light of material suns. So the senses, which give the information to the mind, they can't hold on to that lovely shade, that ghostly, brilliant form. And you explain the last two lines? Line 200, only the spirit knew.
Okay, yeah, only the spirit. That was what I was trying to explain. Oh. Only the spirit.
Savitri spirit,
yes, Savitri
recognizes
spirit. Yeah.
Satyavan's spirit, yeah. And the heart.
Yeah. And
you know this word divined?
Yeah.
It's like the divine water. You know, the water diviner walks on the field and somehow he knows where there's water. So it's kind of another sense. Not one of our physical senses, some other subtle sense which knows. So in the same way, her heart can somehow sense and feel his heart. It's the same old loved heart, even though the appearance has changed. Diviners often use a rod, but they don't have to use a rod.
Deviner,
to guess, no? Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So who will read? Aaron, you will read? No? Paula. Between two realms.
Between two realms he stood, not wavering, but fixed, in quiet, strong expectancy, like one who, sightless, listens for a command. So were they immobile on that earthly field, power not of earth, though one in human clay. On either side of one, two spirits strove. Silence battled with silence, vast with vast. But now the impulse of the path was felt, moving from the silence that supports the stars to touch the confines of the visible world. Luminous, he moved away. Behind him, death went slowly with his noiseless tread, as seen in dream-built fields, a shadowy herdsman glides behind some wanderer from his voiceless herds. And solitary moved behind eternal death. Her mortal pace was equaled with the gods. Wordless, she traveled in her lover's steps, planting her human feet where his had trod, into the perilous silences beyond.
So Savitri was also waiting for a command, no? As if waiting for a race to begin. In the same way, Satyavan is standing between two realms, the physical, material realm and the subtle worlds. No? And he is also, he's not wavering, he's steady, fixed in quiet, strong expectancy, waiting for the command. As one who's sightless, he doesn't know where the signal is going to come from. So they are still on the earth. They were immobile on that earthly field. But they don't, none of them belong to earth. Powers not of earth, though one in human clay. Savitri is still wearing her human body. And Satyavan's in the middle, and on either side, Savitri and death are competing, strove, battling. But now Satyavan feels the impulse. Savitri also was waiting for that impulse that out of the ocean some wave would come and carry her. No? Now Satyavan feels the impulse of the path. He started on that path into the beyond. No? It's also coming like a kind of wave, moving from the silence that supports the stars. And it's moving towards the confines, the border lines of the visible world. So we see him moving away, this luminous figure, and death goes behind him like a shepherd. Behind, if he's lost one of his flock, he has to bring it back. And when they move, then Savitri follows behind death. So that's now the order. Savitri at the back, death in the middle, Satyavan moving forward. And she, although she's still in a body, she can follow in the same pace as the god. But she plants her feet where Satyavan's feet have trod and follows him into those perilous silences beyond. I think we stopped there, that we haven't read beyond there. So let us do that. We have four more pages to the end of the canto. So we'll just read. Prasad, you'll start.
The blind stress of wood she moved with strange inhuman face on the soil, journeying as if upon unseen road. Around her on the green and imaged road, the flickering stream of the forest ringed her steps. Its thick, luxurious obstacle of bark besieged her body, pressing dimly through in a rich realm of whispers palpable, and all the murmurous beauty of the leaves rippled around her like an emerald robe. But more and more this grew an alien sound, and her old inmate body seemed to her a burden which her being remotely bore, herself lived far in some uplifted scene, where to trance claim vision of pursuit. Soul presence in a high spaceless tree, the luminous spirit glided stillly on, and the great shadow traveled vague behind, still with an armor proud.
Amorous. Loving.
Still with an amorous crowd of seeking hands, softly entranced by their old desires, her sense felt earth's close and gentle air cling around them and in troubled branches new, uncertain treadings of a faint foot wind. She bore dim fragrance, far calling touched the wild bird's voice, and its wing rustled came, as if a sigh from some forgotten world. Earth stood aloof, yet near. Round her it wove its sweetness and its greenness and delight, its brilliance.
Suave
of well-loved vivid hues, sunlight arriving to its golden noon, and the blue heavens and the caressing soil. The ancient mother offered to her child a simple world of kind familiar things.
Thank you.
Oh,
we are reading through, yes, sorry. Marco.
And now, as if the body's senses cold, curving the Godhead of her infinite walk, her free full spirit to the greater world, across some boundaries intangible far, the silent God, you mighty and remote in other spaces, and the soul she loved, lost its consenting nearness to her love. Into a deep and unfamiliar air, enormous, windless, without stir or sound, they seem to a large way, drawn by some wide, pale distance from the warm control of earth and her grown farm. Now they would escape. Then, fleeing from her body's nest, alarm, her violent spirit soared at such a time. Out mid the plunge of heaven-surrounded rocks, so in a terror and a rattling vine from her airy streams against descending death, indignant at his approaching point of steel, a fierce she-eagle threatened in her brood, born on a rush of puissance and a cry, outwinging like a mass of golden fire. So on a spirit's flaming outrush born, she crossed the borders of dividing sense. Like pale discarded sheets dropped down, her mortal members fell back from her soul.
Thank you. Patricia?
A moment of a secret body's sleep, her trance knew not of sun or earth or world. Thought, time, and death were absent from her grasp. She knew not self, forgotten was solitary. All was the violent ocean of a will where lived captive to an immense caress, possessed in a supreme identity, her aim, joy, origin, Satyavan alone. Her sovereign, prisoned in her being's core, he beat there like a rhythmic heart. Herself, but different. One note enveloped, clasped, a treasure saved from the collapse of space. Around him, nameless, infinite, she surged, her spirit fulfilled in his spirit, rich with all time, as if love's deathless moment had been found. A pearl within eternity's white shell. Then, out of the engulfing sea of trance, her mind rose, drenched to light, streaming with hues of vision, and, awake once more to time, returned to shape the lineaments of things and live in borders of the seen and known.
Thank you. Anna?
On water, the tree still moved in herself, so it seemed, as if pleasing the fragments of a dream. She seemed to travel on, a vision shape, imagining other muses like herself, like them imagined in their lonely sea. Unrasped, unreal, yet familiar, old, like clefts of unsubstantial memory, scenes often traversed, never lived in, fled past them, heeding to forgotten goals. In voiceless regions, they were travelers, alone in a new world where souls were not, but only living beings. A strange, hushed world, country was round them, strange, far skies above, a doubting space where dreaming objects lived within themselves. They were one unchanged idea. Where the grasses, where the coolest plains, waved round the road which like fear has gone towards that of which it has most terrible. Past, phantasma between pillared conscious rocks, somber and hard, gates brooding, whose stone walls lost their huge sense beyond the giant night.
Thank you. Jocelyn?
A vision of the new conscious structure of sleep, symbols of the approach of darkness air, and movement of a tightened train, openings to death, like down coupling doors, that hope the traveler down on a haunted path, a happy to a mystery that slaves, they watch.
Thank you. Helmut. Chitra, will you read?
Where it shall perish like a helpless thought.
know the cold tombstones of their coursing life. Armed vain youth with the ideal's borrowed might, dare not to outstrip man's bound and measured force. Ignorant and stumbling in brief boundaries spent, he crowns himself the world's moth suzerain, tormenting nature with the works of mind. O sleeper, dreaming of divinity, wake trembling with the indifferent silences in which thy few weak hearts of being die. Impermanent creatures, sorrowful form of time, your transient loves bind not the eternal gods.
Thank you. Mihong.
The dread voice ebbed in the consenting hush, which seemed to close upon it, wide, intense, a wordless section from the Jews of night, of Jews of night. The woman answered not. A high, nude soul, stripped of the girdle of immortality, against the fixed destiny and the grooves of law, stood up in its sheer will of primal pose. Stay like a statue on its pedestal, lone in the silence and the two vastness bared. Against the midnight dumb abysses piled in front, a columned shot of fire and the light she rose.
Thank you.
This wants music. Somebody should have composed music.
Well, it has its own music, doesn't it?
Yes.
If we manage to read it right, it has such a wonderful music. But we could imagine that some great composer, when we have the man who will make the film, that these geniuses will all work together to give even greater, richer expression, to bring out all the suggestions of this marvelous language. Yeah. So page 577 at the break. Page 577 at the break. We'll go back and we'll look in more detail at what we just read. Do you like to read?
Where do we start?
At the break, at first.
At first, in the blind stress of woods she moved, with strange inhuman paces on the soil, journeying as if up an unseen road. Around her on the green and imaged earth, the flickering screen of forest ringed her steps. Its thick, luxurious obstacle of boughs besieged her body, pressing dimly through in a rich realm of whispers palpable, and all the murmurous beauty of the leaves rippled around her like an emerald robe. But more and more this grew an alien sound, and her old intimate body seemed to her a burden which her being remotely bore. Herself lived far in some uplifted scene, where to the trance claimed vision of pursuit, soul presences in a high space was green. The luminous spirit glided stilly on, and the great shadow traveled far behind.
Thank you. So the realities of Earth are still there. She's following them, but she has to push through the branches and the trees, no? The leaves. But in her consciousness, she moves further and further away from that. No? More and more, the sound of the earth becomes an alien sound. And her body, which is so familiar to her, begins to seem heavy and something which she's carrying at a distance, remotely. It's not at the very center of her being. Herself, she lived in some high uplifted scene, another plane. And there her vision is following, in a kind of trance, it's following the luminous spirit, Satyavan, gliding on, and the great shadow of death behind him. It's as if that's what the only figures that she's conscious of, really, soul presences in a high, spaceless dream.
This word stilling, have you ever seen this word before, have you? Glided stilly on?
I think it must be in the dictionary, but anyway, it's very clear what it means, no? No, are you bothered about? No, it means as if without movement, without moving. She's absolutely still, or he is absolutely still, but he's gliding on without movement.
It's not in the dictionary.
It's not in Rand Hicks's dictionary. We can try in the Webster's.
I think it's proper now, though.
Should be, yes. You have it there in the online. She has it in the online dictionary.
Yeah.
That's what
you said. All the things are stolen by da-da-da-da. This is a song with the
word. So that's one of the great advantages of English for the poet, that you can take a word like still and you can add the adverbial ending, li, and then it's somehow clear what the word means.
Somewhat archaic, I would imagine. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's say poetic. And we go on with Savitri's experience. You ready to read, Mariaj? Yeah? Yeah, still again, yes.
Still with an amorous crowd of seeking hands, softly entreated by their old desires, the senses felt earth, clothes, and gentle air cling round them, and in troubled branches move, uncertain clippings of a faint wood wing. She bore dim fragrances, far falling. Wild bird's voice and its winged rustle came as if a sigh from some forgotten world. Earth at near, round her it wore its sweetness and its greenness and delight, its brilliance swirl of world of vivid mood. Sunlight arriving to its golden moon, and the big heavens and the caressing soul. The ancient mother offered to her child a simple world of kind, familiar things.
Thank you. It's such a lovely description of how our senses link us to the material world. And he's saying that with all this that's going on, the senses in the body are still doing all that feeling, no? They love, with love, they feel all these, like with seeking hands, the desires of the senses are attracting them, no? So she feels the earth atmosphere around her. She's aware of the wind passing through the branches of the trees, the forest trees, aware of the wind. She has, can perceive fragrances, she can hear the birds. So she feels earth somehow at a distance, aloof, and yet near. And its earth is still weaving all its attraction, its sweetness, and its greenness and delight. That soft and gentle, smooth brilliance of the familiar, well-loved, vivid colors. Sunlight. And here Sri Aurobindo again reminds us not only what time of year it is, but what time of day. It's the middle of the day, sunlight arriving to its golden noon. And there's the blue heavens and the soil, the caressing soil. So in this way, the ancient mother, Mother Earth, offers to her child, to Savitri, her simple world of kind, familiar things. Very reassuring, and these are the attractions of Earth.
But this almost makes us...
Yes, it's as if the ancient mother is holding on to her. But she wants to follow Satyavan, so that's now the next thing. Actually, she has to leave her body behind. She has to let the body go.
It's like when you're leaving your body when you die, right? It is her own personal
experience. Luba's saying this might be how it feels when you die, that the kind, familiar things of Earth are holding on to you, but some part of you needs to leave.
No, but Savitri is still in a human body.
Right? Yes.
And Satyavan is the soul.
Yes.
So, but
how is she going to follow him? In order to follow him, that's the next passage. Well, next but one. Do you like to read? But now?
But now, as if the body's senses of curbing the Godhead of her infinite world had pricked those spirits to their grander road across some boundaries, intangible bar, the silent God grew mighty and remote. In other spaces, and the soul she loved lost its consenting nearness to her life. Into a deep and unfamiliar air, enormous without stir or sound, there seemed to enlarge the way, drawn by some wide, vague distance from the warm control of Earth. And her grown far, now they would escape.
So the feeling that they will escape from her, she's still in the body. They are in other space, they are going to get away. It's as if this amorous hold, the sensuous hold of the body has been holding her back, curbing the Godhead of her infinite walk, had allowed those spirits to their grander world in the subtle worlds, no? As if they've crossed over some boundary and they are growing far away from her and from Earth. Now they would escape. So then there's such a reaction. Don, you read it.
Then flaming?
Yes.
Then, flaming from her body's nest alarm, her violent spirit soared at Satyavan. Out mid the plunge of heaven-surrounded rocks, soul in a terror and her wrath divine, from her iry screams against the ascending death, indignant at its crouching point of steel, a fierce she-eagle threatened in her brood, born on a rush of puissance and a cry, outwinging like a mass of golden fire. So, on a spirit's flaming outrush born, she crossed the borders of dividing sense, like pale, discarded sheets, dropped dully down, her mortal members fell back from her soul.
Thank you. So it's another of these amazing pictures, and we feel that Sri Aurobindo must have seen this. You know, it happens in Kazakhstan, I believe, that the young men, they go out hunting to find an eagle's nest, and there they will steal the young ones, or one or two of the young ones, and to train them. It's a kind of rite of passage that they do. So it's almost like Sri Aurobindo has seen that, no? That he's how when the hunters come with their threatening point of steel, the mother bird flames up like a mass of golden fire, all her beautiful golden feathers, her huge wings. She wants to defend her chicks. No? So similarly, Savitri's spirit alarmed the thought they're going to escape. It flames up out of the nest of her body. No? She's carried on this flaming outrush of the spirit. Spirit, yes. And so the pale, discarded sheaths of the body and the other sheaths, the life sheath and mind sheath, that are closely connected with the body, they just fall away like clothes. Pale, discarded sheaths. These are her mortal members, the parts of her that are subject to death.
What is this eyrie?
An eyrie is the nest of an eagle, an eagle's nest. Oh, I don't know. I've always said eyrie, but maybe it's eyrie. It's connected with the eagle.
A fierce she-eagle threatened
him. Yeah, the mother bird, no? She's got her young ones there. Has to defend them. You read? Do you like to read? Okay, then you like to listen. Mila.
A moment of a secret body sleep. Her trance knew not of sun or earth or war. Thought, time and death were absent from her grasp. She knew not self. Forgotten was Savitri. All was the violent ocean of a wind, were lived captive, or to an immense caress, possessed in a supreme identity, her aim, joy, origin, Satyavan alone. Her sovereign vision in her being's core, he beat there like a rhythmic heart, herself, but different still, one love, envelope, clasp, a treasure safe from the collapse of the space. Around him nameless, infinite she surged, her spirit fulfilled in his spirit, rich with all time, as if love's deathless moment had been found, a pearl within eternity's white shell.
Thank you. So she's holding on to him with her will. This violent ocean of a will. It's not a personal will. She has no sense of her personal being anymore. She knew not self. Forgotten was Savitri. There's only this will to hold on to Savitri. Satyavan, sorry. He is her aim, her joy, her origin. He is everything to her. He's her sovereign, her lord, her ruler, but she's holding him tight in the very core of her being, and she can feel him beating there like a heart. Herself, but different still. One loved, enveloped, clasped, a treasure saved from the collapse of space. Everything has gone, only this. And she herself is surging round them in this ocean of will. No? She has no name, she has no boundaries. Her spirit fulfilled in his spirit, rich with all time, as if love's deathless moment had been found, a pearl within eternity's white shell.
I don't understand sovereign. Her sovereign prisoned in her being's core.
He's her king, her ruler, Satyavan is.
Oh. Her, oh.
Got it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Perhaps we can stop there for today, unless anybody has anything else they would like to ask. What have you got for us, Margaret? Yeah. Oh, Norman has an announcement. He was beaming his will at me.
I just want to bring your attention to a concert we're doing on Tuesday at Kripa. Holger has written some original music for The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. And we're doing a concert at 7:30. I'll be reading The Ancient Mariner. And the music I heard the last week is very, very interesting and very original. So I think you'll enjoy it. So it's Kripa, 7:30 on Tuesday.
It may be that not everybody.
Holger? Oh, who's playing? Yes, we have a trio of professional musicians. Yeah, they're excellent, actually.
It may be that not everybody knows about The Ancient Mariner.
Yes, The Ancient Mariner is one of the, well, in my opinion, one of the great poems written in the English language. It's written by someone called Samuel Taylor Coleridge in the 18th century. It's an international poem, Water, Water, and Not a Drop to Drink.
Water, Water, Everywhere.
And the albatross hung around my neck. So it became part of the English language, actually. Yes, I think it's
very one of the seminal poems, we can say, at the beginning of modern British poetry.
Yes, yes, it's the beginning of the Romantic century.
Mm-hmm.
And Wordsworth and all that sort of crowds really became part of the whole Romantic scene with Coleridge.
But it's got a beautiful ballad rhythm. Those Romantics, when they started to reform English poetry in the early in the first decade of the 19th century.
It's original music, and I've been listening to it all week, and I think it's very interesting and works very well with the poem itself.
With the rhythm of the poem, it's a memorable rhythm of the poem.
Will I provide
because
these?
Because the foreigners, we cannot follow English sometimes.
Ah, but
we can.
I don't think they'll be able to do that, but you can read it. You can get it on the web, and
the
you
web.
Can read the poem before.
Okay.
If you I think it probably is a good idea because it's very intense. And it's, it's called The Rime of the Ancient Mariner.
Okay.
It's by Samuel Taylor Coleridge.
Okay.
It's the news and notes. It's all the information in the news and notes.
Okay.
So. I think you'll enjoy it.
You read the whole thing?
We understand.
Well, yes. Well, I'll speak slowly.
It's relatively understandable.
We're doing the whole poem. Yes, it takes about an hour. But it's, yes.
Audrey.
At 5:00 on that same day, there's an opening at Calicandra of a woman's painting show, 20 women, and there are 6 pavilions in that.
Barrett Nevers.
Barrett Nevers, okay.
Because Tuesday is a human holiday. This is why the
Women's Day.
It's Women's Day, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Shall we hear Mother reading a few lines from this canto?
Like a tree recovering from the wind, she raised her noble head, something her gaze. Something stood there, unearthly, somber, grand, a limitless demand. Without stir or sound,
they seem to enlarge the way drawn by some wide day distance from the warm control of earth and her grown far now. Now they would escape. Then flaming from her body's nest, alarmed, her violent spirit soared at Satyava. Enigma of the inconscient sculptural sleep, symbol of the approach to darkness old, and monument of her titanic reign. Accompany death to his home, as if thy breath could live where time must die.
Thanks to Sherpendorf.